Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. David Essel is my guest today. David's a life coach. He's written books. He's had an interesting life and has applied the information that he's learned through his struggles in how to overcome adversity, and he's sharing that information with us today. You're going to want to listen to my interview with David, and it'll happen right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on The Journey of Hope. My email address is mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's mathersrodney@yahoo.com. I would certainly love to hear from you. Let me know how you're doing, okay? Everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is David Essel. David is going to be talking to us about some ways to overcome some of the things that we might be running into as we move from incarceration into our mainstream lives and trying to get our lives back together. David has been a very successful life coach, and he's got books, he's traveled, and we're going to be talking about those things, but he's also overcome his own struggles, and we want to tap him for how he did that today. David, welcome to The Journey of Hope.
Oh, Rodney, great to be with you. Absolutely happy to be here.
It's lovely to have you. Can you tell us just a little bit about yourself? Can we start there, maybe a little bit about your history so that we have an idea where you're coming from?
Yeah, you know, I was, pretty average childhood, a lower middle class. We had enough to get by. Never really struggled, but you know, my world began in the world of addiction at around 8 years of age, Rodney, where I found I was a very sensitive child, still am, and I think most addicts, alcoholics, we all have this outrageously sensitive nature, which has both positives and negatives. But around the age of eight, I found that when I was hurting, I was insecure, I was angry, and I didn't know how to express those emotions, that if I ate the right amount of sugar, as wild as this sounds, I would feel fine. And then at 12, I was introduced to alcohol, 13, pot, acid, cocaine, everything in high school that you can imagine. And that's really the start of my life. You know, it's kind of interesting that I ended up choosing a career of helping people to get clean and to redirect their lives. But my life was a struggle for a long time because of the addictions, Rodney. But I went into the world of helping people as a counselor, a master life coach. I became a minister. I had a church for a number of years. I still preach on a regular basis. But there was periods of time, as many of your listeners understand very, very well, is that there's a period of time that life is absolutely can be hell on earth. And our role in the world of healing and teaching is to help people who are in tough situations to create hope, and then most importantly, Rodney, an action plan to change their existence.
And you even got so far deep into, you know, yourself that you were even contemplating suicide at one point. And in the letter that I received asking me, to consider you for the podcast, there was some talk about that in there. Do you want to talk about that and tell us how you got past that?
Yeah. Robbie, it's really interesting. Most individuals that have suicidal thoughts, or what's called suicidal ideation, where that we want to remove ourselves from this world, we don't usually share. You know, that's one of the things about people that are in that really tough place. 40 million people in the United States today are struggling with anxiety and depression. My depression, which started very young in life, continued to grow over the years. And then in 1990, and it's kind of really bizarre in a way, Rodney, too, because I had created a great amount of success in the 80s. I started my career 40 years ago in 1980. And from 1980 to 1990, I had created material success, but I had never taken care of the underlying depression. And it continued to grow. And one of the ways we know our depression is growing is, are we drinking more? Are we smoking more? Are we eating more? Are we watching more television? Are we spending money we don't have? These are all signs that we are in a depressed state. A person in a non-depressed state isn't going to continue to gain weight, drink more, do more drugs, whatever it might be, because what we're doing is we're trying to medicate ourselves out of our own existence. And then in 1990, it finally crashed, and a straw that broke the camel's back, and I decided that I was no longer meant to be here. I got the materials. I had planned the next morning, actually, to perform the act. And when I got up, Rodney, there was this overwhelming fear of actually being able to pull it off. That's the only word I can use, is that I woke up and just said, I can't do this. And it was weird because I didn't want to live. I did not want to be here on Earth, but I couldn't do the work to take my own life. So I ended up starting to call psychiatrists in the town I was living in. And everyone said that they could get me in 3 months. And I'm sitting here wanting to kill myself. And I ended up getting in the car and driving to, I just picked one out of the phone book. I drove, I walked in, I said to the receptionist, I am sitting here all day long if I have to. She said, the doctor will not see you. I said, that's fine. And at 6 o'clock at night, when he opened his office door to leave, I was still there. And he took me in. And I cried in his office for the longest period of time. I was so lost, Rodney. And then I looked up and he said, I can help you. And it was the most amazing words. You know, when you're in that much pain and someone doesn't minimize it and say, oh, you're just having a bad month or a bad year or a bad week or whatever. You know, when someone empathizes with you, that gave me hope. Now, it took a year of constant counseling and medication to get myself back into a normalized state. But I will tell you that the work that I had to do in that year, I'm here with you now, Rodney, was so worth it. And the people I've met along the way that I have now helped as a counselor get out of their own pits in life has been very rewarding as well.
Okay. Well, I don't think we've really gotten to, you know, and thank God that you were able to reverse your thinking on that. But I'm not sure we've really gotten to how you did that. You know, what was it that gave you the impetus to turn around, other than talking to the doctor that day, taking those first steps to get things turned around? Where did that come from?
You know, that's an internal voice answer. There was no one in the outside world that had anything to do with this. Some people may say it was God's voice. Other people could say it was universal energy's voice. That the answer to that question, I could not be 100% specific with, other than when I'm in that place of saying, I don't want to live, but I don't have the strength to take my own life. That's when the voice came and said, get in the car and drive. Go to a doctor, you know, like that. And I could have gone to the hospital. I could have called the 800 suicide hotline. There's so many different options, Rodney. But in that mental state, when you're not grounded at all, it was a blessing that I even heard a voice that said, drive here or do this.
Right.
So, I like to look at that as divine intervention. I like to look at that as that I was guided from the outside by someone energetically, some entity, God, whoever it is. That brought me there. And then, you know, here's the other thing that is the synchronicity of it all. There are physicians, psychiatrists, and counselors in this world, part of the world that I'm made of, that may not have taken me that day. And I was fortunate enough.
That's true.
You know, to go to someone that said, no, I mean, you know, and the secretary, and this is not a knock against her, she was just repeating what she was told to repeat. I mean, multiple times said to me, there's no way he's going to see you tonight when he's done. I said, that's okay. I'm waiting. You know, and then I mean, all of this is so divine in my mind.
Mm-hmm. And these days, people very well could say, I don't know, man, you got insurance while you're standing there crying, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, I get that. But there's a degree that you talk about there of hopelessness that, you know, well, let me just ask you this way. When you travel and speak to people, what is it you say to them about, if you could share with us, what is it you say to them about how to address, like, hopelessness, like the feeling of I just am not going to get any better? How do you help people get past that?
Rodney, it's a great question. And the answer is this, is that we're never going to get past this on our own.
Mm-hmm.
You have to ask for help. That is the answer. The only way through hopelessness for most of us. Now, every once in a while, you will run into someone that was homeless, out on the street, down on their luck, and somehow they gathered themselves together. As the old saying goes, they pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps and moved forward in life. But I don't see that as being the norm. I see the norm is things like that would happen with me. I got to a place where I couldn't handle it and I needed help and I asked for it. If there is one step that every listener can take today, when you're in that space, and maybe it's an addiction, maybe it's a financial, maybe it's a legal issue, maybe it's a massive relationship issue, we need to be willing to reach out when we feel hopeless and share. And when I say share, I don't mean just with your family, your friends. I mean with professionals. You know, there are so many ministers, and as a minister, you know, there are so many of us across the country that are here and that have ears, and we're willing to listen. And you know, there are churches and synagogues and temples that offer counseling at no fee. There's women's shelters that offers counseling at no fees. There's all kinds of programs in our country that we can tap into. Even if we're strapped, if we have no money at all, but
right,
we've got to reach out and ask for help.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And I think that taking that step for some people is very, very hard, especially the audience that we're talking to today that has lived in an environment where, you know, you got to be tough. And you have to, and that gets internalized over a period of years, and you don't want to ask for help. You know, that asking
right
for help is for, you know, weak people. And so coming to the realization that you need to ask for help is hard to get to, for people to consider that have been in that, you know, prison environment, which is our audience today. And so, yeah, I agree with you, but getting there is very difficult, but you did it.
Oh, God, yes. And let me say something about that, Rodney, because it is hard. Many of the most brilliant moves in life that we can make are difficult moves. They're the right move, but they're really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay that it's a hard move. You know, there was a, I don't know if you remember a football player, Thomas Hollywood Henderson.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and he's from Texas. He played at Dallas.
Right. Oh, yeah, I remember him, sure.
Yeah, and he was something. Well, this guy had, you know, after he got out of football, lived a life of hell. You know, he was in prison for a very long period of time. And he eventually turned his life around. And when I was speaking with him, I asked him what was his first step. And he said that, you know, he resisted all of the help in prison.
Mm-hmm.
The prayer meetings, he resisted the 12-step meetings, he resisted everything. And he said he realized that in prison he could get all the drugs that he got on the street. And then all of a sudden, one day, he awoke and realized that he's in prison and he's still thinking about his drug addict days and wanting to get back into them.
Mm-hmm.
And how insane was that? Like, I don't know where that moment of lucidity is.
Right. I understand.
But he was there going, wait a second, I'm in prison. You know, he was caught
right
in a crack house. with two underage girls, which is how, what got him in prison. And he said, I'm in here. What am I doing? And that was the turnaround for Hollywood Henderson. You know, he eventually asked for help, and before he even knew what happened next, he was leading the prayer circles in the prison. You know, so there was this beautiful, again, let's talk about a divine voice that came to him that said, you're in prison and you're thinking about the lifestyle and wanting the lifestyle you had that got you in here?
Right.
Like, how insane is that? And it was that snap moment, Rodney, that turned Hollywood Henderson around. And now, you know, I haven't talked to him in, let's see, probably 10 years. But when I talked to him 10 years ago, I mean, he was on a mission, man. This guy was going treatment center to treatment center, you know, helping ex-convicts, working his butt off to let people know that there is a way out of the insanity.
Wow. It's an inspiring story. You know, I have seen some big old tough dudes. My experience personally in prison, you know, was that being pushed into a corner like that, you can sometimes, that's what it takes, the punitive part of prison, to push someone into a corner and to have them realize that they need some help. But unfortunately, Hollywood Henderson and my experience, that's kind of what happened to me too. Unfortunately, I don't think that's as that's very common in prison. I mean, it happens, but the punitive nature, I mean, it was enough for me, but I don't think that it's enough for people that live in that kind of an environment on the street. You know, they're there with their friends and so forth. So those guys getting away from that kind of mentality when they get released and trying to get away from the drugs and I'm occasionally around former inmates who have discharged their sentence and some things that I do, and they're still wearing their pants down low. You know, they still got that swagger, and it makes me sad. And I wonder, you know, what is it that we could do or say to them to help them? What would be your advice along those lines? I know it's an impossible question, David, but what would be your advice to those guys?
Rodney, well, let me mention something. You know, there's two programs going on in prisons in our country that are humanizing prisoners, which is one thing I think we need to do. I think we need to have the punitive, absolutely, but I also think we need the humanization. And this is where, in my belief system, and I have never spent time in prison, but I do believe that this is where we're missing the boat. It's just like the war on drugs. When we start bringing, you know, and now I'm not talking about for the El Chapos of the world, where we need the military intervention and the police intervention, but there's so many mistakes made, people being imprisoned for things that they really shouldn't be in prison for. But let me talk about the two programs. One's Riker Island. And at the Riker Island prison, they have an opportunity for select prisoners that they have to be talked to and see who's the right mold to actually have plots of land, as weird as this sounds, Rodney, to take care of. You know, and then there's the prisons with the dogs, of course, the one pit bulls and parolees that we've seen on TV. But in the state of Florida, there's several prisons that they actually bring in greyhounds, former racing dogs, and the prisoners are in charge of teaching these dogs, you know, how to sit, stay, how to do things that they're not trained as racing dogs. And friends of mine that are involved in this greyhound program say, you would not believe these men become real human again in a prison environment because they have something to live for. The hopelessness is gone. They have, you know, in one case, plants to take care of, and another, an animal to take care of. So I think we can do some things like that. But then the question is this, and this is something that I don't have the answer for, but how do we take a hardened person? How do we take someone off the streets that is survival-minded only and get them to release some of that egoic need to be in charge and to be the man, and take advantage of something like this, which could make us be more human-like, such as whether it's the plants or the dogs or the animals. You know, and that gives these guys hope. One of the stories that a friend of mine told me who's involved with the Greyhound and the prisoners, she said she was there last week, and they have this graduation where the prisoners have the dogs for 10 weeks to teach them everything. And she said she went with a friend who was getting a Greyhound, and the male prisoner walked the Greyhound over on a leash, handed her the leash, started telling her about the dog's name and what the dog liked and what he didn't like. And then at that moment, the prisoner broke down, hysterically crying, because he realized that this was the end of the road for him and this one dog. But she said what he didn't realize is that when he went back to his cell, there was another dog waiting.
Wow.
And she said, David, if you could have seen the expression of this big grown man hysterically crying, and then 5 minutes later you see him walking out of his cell with another dog with the biggest smile on his face you could imagine. And Ronnie, I don't know, you know, again, I'm not a part of the prison system, and I don't know what it would take to have these programs expanded, but these are the kind of things, in my opinion, that give people hope. You know, it's like when I work with the homeless. For years, I worked with the homeless, and one of the things that I would encourage them to do is to go and apply for jobs. And it was crazy, because they'd look at me like I was insane, and I would help prepare them. And I didn't care if it was window washing. I didn't care if it was day labor work. But that gave them hope. Like, no one had ever said to them, let me help you learn how to fill out a resume. Let me help you answer questions in an interview.
Right.
No one had ever given them that information. And when we started doing it, Rodney, their eyes would light up because there was hope again.
Yeah, and it's all about that hope. And it's the... unfortunately, the lack of that hope that makes so many that come out of incarceration maybe even, you know, bump up that recidivism number, because they just feel like, and I know guys like this, that they just feel like there's really no light at the end of the tunnel, because they can't get that job. And most of the guys, we're running out of time, David, but just real quickly, There's a population of people that I'm not sure that the public is aware that there are so many people in prison that come from not the streets, and they're not carjackers, they're not bank robbers, but they've committed crimes that it took them away from a professional type of career. And those guys, when they get out, are stuck. They don't have, you know, like, they're not carpenters, they're not plumbers, they're not, you know, air conditioner guys. They went to college and were professionally trained for their careers. And man, I tell you, they're stuck when they come out because there's nowhere for them to go. And so what I would ask you at this point, and another impossible question, David, but what would you say to that group of people that is looking for a little bit of hope in their life?
I have a very good friend that spent 2.5 years in prison. She was a realtor, and I actually, you know, we were best friends, and I actually did some transactions with her, and it was during the big bust, just before or during the bust, the economic bust around 2008.
Right.
She was caught, and she did some things that were illegal, and she was put in prison for 2.5 years. She got out a couple years ago and had been stripped of her license.
That's the problem. Yeah.
Yeah, and she could never be a realtor again.
Right.
And so the day she got out of prison, she called me, and she said, I have no hope. I don't know. That's the only thing. And by the way, she was from another country, came here. English is her 10th language down. But
really?
She made this. Oh, God. And this girl... When she came from another country, Rodney, she cleaned toilets for 5 years because she couldn't get a job. And then she found out about real estate. It's a long, fascinating story. She became super successful, but then got very greedy. and in her greed sent her to prison. And she said she deserved it. You know, she's not a victim. She's not saying, I don't deserve this. She said, I did things that were wrong. I knew I was breaking the law, and I deserve this. So when she came out, she said, you know, and the only answer I had for her is, can you go back to your humble beginnings? Can you go back and start over? You've been here before. You cleaned toilets, and you became, she basically became a millionaire, Rodney. And I said, would you be willing to drop that ego and to go back and start again? Because you did it once. I know you can do it a second time. That's all it took, was me reminding her that she had done it again. And she went out, and now she's working menial jobs, but she has hope. And let me mention something else that she did. And this was not of my recommendation. I said to her one day in passing that I think it'd be great if she had some kind of a deeper spiritual or religious path. Now, I don't say that to everyone, and I don't push religion or spirituality on people, but I just brought up, I said, do you think that might help now that you're out of prison? And I didn't say, and she didn't even answer me. I found out months later that it took her a few months to think about it, and then she devoted herself to a church, and now she volunteers at the church, which is opening up more doors for her. So every month she's feeling a little bit more hopeful, but she had to drop that ego and ask for help and take jobs she didn't want to take, right?
That's right.
Rodney, and so, you know, there's quite a few people that, you know, I know personally that have been incarcerated and come out and have gone through it. I have not myself, but it is tough. It is hard. But there are ways in the way you and I are talking today to make it a little less daunting and a little more hopeful.
I think one thing that listeners could do is maybe find you on the internet. How do we find you? And how do we find you? And I know you've got several books, and we didn't even get to that. And I'm sorry about that. I'll try to put it in the post along with your interview. But could you tell us where we could find you?
Yeah, and Rodney, you know, we give away free things to help people get motivated every day. So if they go to our website,
we like free stuff.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like, and we've got a ton of free stuff. I'll briefly mention it, but if they go to the website, talkdavid.com, that's talk, T-A-L-K, David.com. Number one, we have something called the Motivational Minute, which is free. 5 days a week, Rodney, for people that sign up to the Motivational Minute, they'll get an email in their email, they'll get a video in their email box with me giving a 2 or 3 minute tip on what we could do today to make it a better day. So I would say definitely the Motivational Minute.
Yeah.
We also have a free meditation audio on the homepage. And, you know, for people that are under stress, feeling hopeless, there's one of the greatest tools that we have to calm the brain is meditation. So if you go to talkdavid.com, at least get those two gifts free and look at the other stuff we have. But I'd love for you to be inspired daily, and we have a program that costs nothing to help do that.
Great. And you have a blog too, right? Is that right?
Yeah, we've got a massive blog.
Yeah, you do. I've read a little bit of it, and it's very informative, and I recommend that as well. David Essel has been our guest today. David's been successful, and he's gotten past some very difficult personal struggles. I think there's some things that we can learn from David. You want to go check out his website. David, thank you for being on the Journey of Hope today.
Oh, it was great, Rodney. You have a wonderful day.
You too, my friend. We'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. That email address is mathersrodney@yahoo.com. If you got an idea for a podcast, if you got a suggestion for a guest, let me know and I'll certainly look into it. It's mathersrodney@yahoo.com.
I want to thank my special guest today, David Essel, and I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on The Journey of Hope.